Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyone, to Trisha's True Crime Radio on Blog Talk. Thanks for joining me tonight. And I want to thank everybody for their great support of my new show on iHeartRadio. I know it's kind of confusing because at one link you have to listen to it live on Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, and that link is only good for the live show. And then if you want to listen to it again, or if you missed it, you have to go to another link. So I appreciate the time. Now, the good news is I do have an appointment scheduled with one of the big wigs to talk about future things. So keep your fingers crossed. That's what I really need to happen. That's what we need to happen so we can get these cases that are not in the spotlight, like little Tegan. I don't know if you've heard about her, the girl that was a little four-year-old that was tortured and murdered. This hasn't been on the national news, and I don't know why. Tegan Skiba, it is the most horrendous case, and nobody's talking about it, except we are. We'll talk a little bit about that tonight, and we've also been talking about that on the iHeart show. So it's all good news, but we took a break last week because of the Oscars, and then this week it's daylight savings time where we're springing forward, so my head is all messed up. If by chance I revert back to my childhood in the middle of the show, you know that's why. I just can't take all this pressure. And today's show is sponsored by the wonderful people at Pause for Purple Hearts in Palo Alto, California. Pause for Purple Hearts is the first program of its kind to offer therapeutic intervention for veterans and active duty military personnel by teaching those with post-traumatic stress disorder to train service dogs for their comrades with combat-related injuries. Just take a moment, go visit their website, www.pauseforpurpleheartsorg. Okay. We haven't been gooed for a long time, and I think we must do it properly right now, the legal goo. Opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from WebSleuths.com, LLC, and ForumsForJustice.org. In other words, my darling True Crime Angels, if you get upset at something here on the show, don't panic and run to the forums. You come to me, yours truly, and we'll make you all happy again. We have three incredible guests on the show tonight. We have Cheryl McCollum from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. We also have Kathy from CourtChatter.com. And a little bit later, Levi Page will be joining us. But let's say hello to Cheryl. Cheryl, how are you?
I am fabulous, Trisha. How are you, dear?
I'm great. This is like old home week. You know, last summer during the George Zimmerman trial, I just love talking to you. It feels like I just feel so at home.
Well, I appreciate it. I miss talking to you every night.
I know. Well, we'll see. We might be able to do it again this summer with some trials coming up. And let's welcome Kathy from CourtChatter.com. CourtChatter.com, everything you ever want to know about what is going on right now in trials and everything you wanted to know about true crime is at CourtChatter.com. Kathy, welcome, my darling.
Hello. Thank you, Trisha. Hello, Cheryl.
Hey, how are you, honey?
I'm doing good, and I love hearing your accent.
I know, isn't it cute? It's so cute. We are going to talk about Kathy's thing that she is all wrapped up in, and that is the Oscar Pistorius, you know, that one case, Blade Runner. Why do I always have trouble saying his name? Anyway, Kathy has all the details on that. We'll be going to Kathy in just a little bit. And Kathy, feel free to jump in here while I talk to Cheryl, okay? Because we've got some exciting news from Cheryl and the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. Now, remember last summer we had Cheryl's students on, and they both sides, one side argued that was pro-Zimmerman, the other side was not pro-Zimmerman. And what Cheryl did with her class, and I thought this was brilliant, during the Zimmerman trial, during the George Zimmerman trial, they asked, who believes George Zimmerman? You know, a couple of people raised their hand. Who doesn't believe him? Everybody raised their hand. The people that didn't believe them had to defend George Zimmerman. The people that did believe him had to prosecute George Zimmerman. That's what the beauty was. And we did it live on this show, and it was fascinating. And since then, Cheryl and the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute, along with other people that have helped her, and I'm sure she's going to mention them tonight, Cheryl, your institute has received some incredible recognition lately, as they should. What's going on there?
You know, we've been really lucky, Trisha, and I tell you, we've had some really cool people lately recognize the efforts that the students have done, as well as the experts. And one of those folks was Tina Robinson, who's the clerk of court for Fulton County. Jada Hutzbeth came by our 10th anniversary and brought us a beautiful commendation letter from her, just kind of outlining, you know, what the students have done with the Boston Strangler and Moores Ford Bridge and Natalie Holloway and Kirsten Davis. I mean, a lot of people. And it just kind of renewed their spirit. You know, they're already so dedicated. But, you know, when you feel like people are taking note of what you're doing and they're noticing it and you're getting some accolades, I mean, it certainly just kind of revived them.
It does, and you can read that letter. It's absolutely beautiful. If you go to Cheryl McCollum and the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute on Facebook, you can Google it and find it very easily. So, but then it doesn't stop there, right? There's more.
There's more, and we haven't really been able to talk about it. They kind of wanted us to keep it kind of quiet until it got closer to April, but we wrote a book, Cold Case Pathways to Justice. And when I say we, that's exactly what I mean. My name and Betsy Ramsey's might be on the outside of it, but literally it was 80 people that helped us with this book, and we were nominated for a Pulitzer.
Oh, wow. You were? Oh, my God, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. So when
it's
will you...
Still,
how did, you know, tell me how that works. So when will you know? What's going on?
Well, we won't know for sure until April, and the way it kind of works, if you don't win, you just don't hear anything. If you do
that's
win,
how you know.
You get invited to the party. Right. And the reality is, you know, I'm a realist. And I had a real serious conversation with the students, and I just told them, I said, you know, you're talking about people like, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King and, you know, just these incredible people that truly, you look at their body of work and you go, yeah, okay, they kind of deserve it. So, you know, this is one of those situations, Tricia, where literally to have your work submitted for consideration is truly enough. Do I think we're going to win it? Absolutely not. However, it's cool to talk about, and, you know, my own children were freaking out, you know, and my daughter was like, you know, Mom, that's like Dr. Seuss. He won one. I'm like, that's right. Which is why I know Mama's not going to win one. But anyway,
now,
you know.
Well, tell us about the book. Now, this book is not, it's not cheap. Is this the one I'm thinking of?
It's not cheap, and that's the only thing I kind of am sorry about. But I wanted them originally to make it available, you know, like an e-book, and then I wanted them to maybe make it a disc because I really do believe things should be interactive. I mean, you learn by doing. And, you know, I tell my students all the time, you did not learn to ride a bike from a pamphlet. I mean, you got to get on it, and you got to pedal, and you got to crash, and you got to get back up, and y'all know. So I like when people, you know, they say, well, you've got a cold case. And so in the book, we actually include things like missing persons posters from, you know, numerous cases, and we've got fugitive posters. So you can actually take the book and, you know, put it in your community and say, hey, do you know this guy? So, I like the book because it reads more like a novel, which is what I wanted. There was not a textbook that fit my class. So, again, I got Gerding Dyer from the Atlanta Journal. He wrote some stories that are very Mickey Spillane-like. They're easy to read, but you're captivated from the first sentence. And then Catalina Byrd out of Baltimore, who is a phenomenal poet, she wrote some poetry for the victims and for law enforcement. I mean, it's an incredible book, truly. But it wasn't me, because I tell my students again, you know, don't take my word for it. You know, my opinion, who cares what I think? But when there's 80 different people in every possible discipline telling you the exact same information, you might want to go, huh, maybe they're onto something.
They know something, right.
They may. So that's, you know, the way I run my squad. That's, the way I, you know, wanted the book to come across. So, again, if you think Cheryl McCollum doesn't know anything, cool. Very little of me is in that book. But you've got people like Chief Eddie Moody and, you know, Sean LaGrua and Sheila Ross. I mean, there's some phenomenal people. I guarantee you they know what they're talking about. So,
and what is the name of the book?
Cold Case, Pathways to Justice.
And like you said, it's what's so fascinating about it is it's not just a book you open up and read. It's got a little bit of everything It's like, right. Like you said, it's like a book no other. Oh, there we go. My cat just knocked over everything. Sorry about that. That's what happens when you broadcast at home. I'm sorry,
even
go ahead,
like
Cheryl.
We had so many people asking, you know, can I add this or will, you know, you know, highlight this section. So even if you have a loved one that goes missing, there's a whole section of exactly what you should be doing. There's another section to tell you how to contact law enforcement. Because a lot of people say, well, I don't know what to say if I call the chief of police or the detective. We're going to outline exactly what you ought to be saying to them.
That is, you know? It's a book that every community should have when someone is affected by crime, because then they can just go look up, and you're right. I mean, people know to call 911, and that's it. You know, what if you don't want to call 911? Who do you call? And, you know, that's a lot of people don't know.
Sure it is. And then a lot of people say, well, the detective's got the case. I've got to wait for him or her to call me. And that's not true. It's not true. You can call them. And it's important that they know, you know, you're going to stay on top of it, too. And if you think of something new, you're going to call them. That's vital. There's nobody that knows your loved one better than you. So you may not think, oh, they don't want to know that. Yes, they do. The victimology is just as important as anything else they're looking at. So, you know, feel free to call them. And you can even say, look, I don't even know where to start. There's just a few things, you know, that I wanted you to know. And then tell them.
Right.
You know, it's important.
Exactly. And that book truly helps a lot of people because, you know, you and I deal with this all day. And we know what to do, and it's just kind of second nature. But, you know, these people out there that don't know, and please, God, let's hope they never have to know how to do it.
Absolutely.
That would be wonderful. But so now let's just kind of get a little background on the school, because we haven't done this for a long time, talk about the actual school. It's been 10 years. How did it get started? How can you join? What's it all about?
Okay. All right. Well, I was heading up a couple case squad in a sheriff's department in Spalding County, Georgia. And the sheriff said, hey, why don't you take this case, and pointed to one that was kind of baffling to us. He said, take all the pertinent information out and let your students, you know, have a shot at it. I said, awesome. So I took that case file up there. Tricia, I had to throw them out of my classroom. It was
really
insane. Yes, they did not want to go home. And it was a night class, so it didn't start till 8:30, and it was going to go till 10:30. Well, around midnight, I'm like, you know what? Love you. I'm leaving. You know, we can pick this back up, you know, next week. Well, they got so intrigued because it was a real case. It wasn't a case study. It wasn't a mock situation. So I kept that going for a little while, and I thought to myself, you know, this is just how I need to be teaching. Mm-hmm. The mock stuff is great for practice. But, you know, after a year and a half or 3 years or more, these students, they're ready. They've got enough information. And then I thought, well, I'm going to bring in some buddies. So I brought in some, you know, detectives like Vince Velasquez, and I brought in some attorneys like Holly Hughes. Well, honey, all that did was amp it up. Dynamic. Oh, my gosh, right? So they're so dynamic. Now I'm even more intrigued than I was an hour ago. And then you realize, wait a minute, we might actually have some good ideas here.
Uh-huh.
And then we started with three colleges. It was Barter, Auburn, Montgomery, and Faulkner University. So those three colleges got together, and we said, okay, we each are going to have a different discipline. So Barter took suspectology, Auburn had crime analysis, and Faulkner did victimology. And now it has grown in the last 10 years. We have taken on a lot of cases that y'all have probably heard of. Chandra Levy, we had some success with in the arrest of Igmar Gwadiki and his ultimate conviction. The Boston Strangler, and that resulted in positive DNA identification. We've worked on Amber Hagerman, Morris Ford Bridge, Tupac Shakur, Kirsten Davis. Real happy where that case is headed, but we're not finished with Kirsten. And then
I interrupt, Cheryl? Cheryl, can I interrupt you for a second? When you say we've worked on and we've had some success, does that mean that the police come to you and say, well, your students were right, we went and we did what you suggested, and here's what we found out?
I mean, sometimes we've had that, but sometimes, you know, and this is the other reason the Institute is so powerful to me, you're not going to solve them all. Best police work, everything done right. And that's a lesson they need to learn. And so, like with Amber Hagerman, Detective Ford did everything flawless. He thought of things. He did things. He ran down everything. You're just not going to solve this one. So that was a real good study for them. But they said, you know what, we may not solve it, but dadgummit, we can do something. And
do
maybe
something,
what we
right.
can do is get the conversation going again about Amber and maybe get mm-hmm. some information out there how little people can be safer. Because arguably, Amber did everything right. Because what do parents tell you? Stay with your brother. Stay close to the house. You know, don't go out after dark. She was literally on her bicycle riding in front of her grandparents, you know, little cul-de-sac area next to her brother. And she mm-hmm. snatched off her bicycle while moving. I mean, she didn't do anything wrong.
She
wasn't out after dark. She wasn't in an unfamiliar place. She wasn't alone. She wasn't in a strange neighborhood. I mean, her grandparents were 30 yards from her. So it's just one of those
so
heartbreaking
awful.
Deals. So here's what the students did. We got a call from a kid. He was a kid then. He's not now. He's grown. Jake Tinsley. And Jake says, hey, I've got an idea about featuring Amber in a comic book that I write called Night Owl. Well, fast forward, Amber's on the cover of this Night Owl comic book. The Today Show sees it. The Today Show picks it up. They bring us out. They bring Jake out. They do this whole big story on this comic book and how this then 14-year-old child is trying to help solve a murder of a 9-year-old using 20-somethings.
Oh, my gosh,
and,
that is amazing.
That one episode, 4 million people watched. So 4 million people were talking about Amber that normally wouldn't have been. So we will consider that a success. And,
right.
you know, her mom, I mean, you know, the students kept up with her so good and, you know, wrote her letters and we went out to Texas and met with her. And, you know, Donna Norris is a tremendous person. And, you know, you just sit with all these moms, whether it's Beth Holloway or Susan Levy. I mean, all the moms for the missing and murdered children of Atlanta. And you learn so much from them that, again, you want to, you know, you want to go back and work even harder because now the case is real personal.
So where does the Amber case stand?
Unsolved.
So there's no suspect that they're thinking about or
no,
nothing like that?
But, you know, here's the thing. You know, and I'm not Pollyanna. Everything is not positive. There's nothing positive about that case.
Right.
But the Amber Alert did come from it. And because of the Amber Alert system, over 1,000 children have been saved. Well, that's quite a testament to me of her legacy. So it is so gut-wrenching, again, thinking about her mama. But when you think of 1,000 children saved, it's remarkable.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people are asking in the chat room and private messaging me, where can they pick up your book? How do you get it, Cheryl?
There's some on Amazon right now, and then it's published by Pearson, so they can go to Pearson, but, you know, there's Amazon, there's other, you know, used bookstore, like Colleges Online, you can go get it.
And what's the name of it?
Come back and do a giveaway.
Oh,
Cold
I'd
case,
love that.
Pathways to Justice. Maybe I can get a couple copies, and we'll do a Web Sleuth giveaway.
Oh, that would be so wonderful. Oh, my gosh, that would be great.
Maybe if somebody has a really unique way of getting cases out there. But I just want to brief you on one thing.
We got plenty of time, so take your time.
I know. But we are now in 20 colleges across the country, and that's kind of where it's grown. And each college has its own area of discipline. And that's what I'm telling you is so incredibly important. That we have, you know, Metro State College of Denver, we have Illinois Valley Community College, you know, we have Kennesaw State. I mean, we've got some cool colleges that have come together and offered some incredible expertise. And then we have experts across the country that also donate their time and talent to come down to say, look, we're going to train you and we're going to see if you're on the right path, if you're, you know, working in the right direction. So they have people like Betsy Ramsey and, you know, Dr. Hickey out of California. I mean, they've worked with some of the best in the country. And, again, I ain't Pollyanna. I mean, I've seen the worst people can do to each other. But, Trish, I'm going to tell you something. In 10 years, including you, I might add, I have never, ever called and asked somebody for help that didn't tell me yes. Ever.
Right.
Not one time. And so that, to me, when you're talking about human beings, I mean, that's remarkable. People are busy. I got Dr. Fascitelli, the profiler. I mean, she makes $300 an hour. I've never paid her a dime. I hadn't given her a college sweatshirt, I want you to understand.
Oh, my gosh.
I
give her a book.
Give her a book, I know. But listen, because I believe if you don't give them anything, and they come because they know it's the right thing to do, and they
want to
help, then you're going to get better work out of people. My students, they don't get a grade for this. This isn't a class. This is you come when you're out of class and off time, like spring break, Christmas break. Honey, I can't get them out of the institute. And I'm just telling you.
They just keep staying there. Oh, that's funny.
They just keep staying there. When we had our 10th anniversary, all of a sudden I looked up, and here comes the class of 2004, 2005, 2000. I mean, I get choked up right this minute thinking about it. And they all have children. They all have lives. They all have careers. But here they come. And that first group of students that took that first bus ride from Mary Shotwell Little, I'll never forget it. And they won't either. And they come back. And they come back. What can I do? What do you need? We don't have a budget. We have zero budget, Tricia. No money. I've never paid anybody to do anything. And we've had bus trips. We've had experts go to Aruba for Natalie Holloway. We've had people in D.C. We've given dinners. We've given awards. I have a woman that does the awards for us. She's never charged me a dime. How many times?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because they want to do something.
Right.
So, and your show included, when I come on your show and say, okay, Tricia, I need some help. I need help with Zodiac. Like right now, this year we have Zodiac. We need help with Zodiac. We need help with Vi Ripken. You have never once not said, hey, I'm going to put this all over web food. I'm going all over the radio.
Oh, absolutely.
And you come this week.
Whatever you need. So, but Cheryl, how does somebody find out if their local college is participating in the institute?
They can email me, or they can just call their local criminal justice department and say, hey, are y'all part of this institute? It doesn't cost them anything at all. Mm-hmm. All they need to say is, I have this professor, and this is their area of expertise, and we want to help. Send us some case files, and they can go to work. And we're at the point now, Tricia, where some of the experts are kind of, they somewhat overlap, but let me tell you what's awesome about that. If I've got two profilers or 50 profilers and they all come back with the same person, I can absolutely, without hesitation, guarantee I know who did it.
Right, exactly. That's a great
thing. So even though there may be some overlap, it ain't negative at all.
There you go. It's good. It's actually very, very good, like you said.
Amen.
Well,
yeah.
Sure. Cheryl, I know you have to go. I wish you could stay and talk to us for hours and hours and hours, but like I've always...
Honey, I'm in the middle of a dinner party. My friend, this is so crazy. She called me and she said, my husband has just caught all this red snapper, but he would love to have the party at your house, so you can't turn that down. So I'm in the middle of it, but I just walked off, we're over by the lake, and I just walked over to the backside, but I will be calling you because we are going to need some help with Vi Ripken. And I will go ahead and tell your audience right now, you can go online. There is a composite as well as a video of the person that kidnapped Vi Ripken. That's Cal Ripken, the baseball player's mama. If you will post that on your Facebook, somebody knows this man. And Cal Ripken is offering $100,000 for the information that leads to the arrest and conviction of the person that kidnapped her. So we're trying to help Aberdeen, Maryland out. So
we'll put it all. We will put it all over.
All right, and Tricia, I'll call you soon, and we'll get that giveaway together. I would love to.
That sounds wonderful. That would be fantastic. Cheryl, you go enjoy that fish and have a wonderful night.
Right.
And know we love you. Okay.
Love
thanks,
y'all
my
too.
Dear.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye bye. Okay, there we go. Wow, Kathy.
Yeah. Wow.
Isn't she amazing? I mean,
she is
truly. Is an amazing human. I just love her. And, from the day that I called her, I didn't know her. I knew her from watching her on Nancy Grace. That's what I loved about her was Nancy Grace. Nancy was always rude to her, and it made me mad. And when I first started this show in 2000, what a surprise, huh? I don't watch Nancy anymore because she's just so damn mean. But anyway, when I started this blog talk in 2011, she was one of the first people big people I called, I think. And, she was so gracious and so kind. And she was every night during the Zimmerman trial, because everybody was so worked up about it, that we wanted to do something. We wanted to give people a place to have an outlet. And she came on board, and every night during the Zimmerman trial, Cheryl McCollum was here with me, and she took a lot of grief. And, we had abusive callers. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it, oh, it was just, it was great and it was a nightmare at the same time. It was just very stressful. But, you know, we had to do it because people, they just didn't want to stop talking about it. So, anyway, she is wonderful. And, yeah, Cal Ripken's mother, just Google that. You'll be able to find all the information posted on your Facebook page. Who knows? You might look at the guy and go, I know that person. That's how it happens. That's how quickly it happens. All anybody needs to do is look. That's it. Okay, we're going to move on here. We have Kathy. Levi has not called in yet, but he will. I know he will. But, Kathy, you are following the Oscar Pistorius case. And I haven't been following it that much, only because when I first heard about it, and maybe this is pretty lame of me, if you will, I just went, that guy is so flippin' guilty. How in the name of God could anybody? Yeah, I heard a noise. I thought it was an intruder, so I shot the bathroom door. Please. Okay, let's start. Kind of just give us a real quick Reader's Digest version of what Oscar says happened that night with his girlfriend.
Okay. Do you want just a real brief on who Oscar even is?
Yes, please.
Okay. So people mostly know him as the Blade Runner from the London 2012 Olympics. He has two prosthetic legs. He was born with a congenital defect, and his legs were amputated halfway between the knee and the ankle when he was like a baby. So he's always had these prosthetic legs, and then they were built into these metal, they call them blades. And he won some medals in the Paralympics, but really wanted to compete in the regular Olympic Games, and he had to appeal that, and he finally won his appeal, and he went to London, and he didn't medal, but he became the star, really, of of the track and field events. And then he came home to South Africa, and this was June 2012, a hero, probably the biggest name in South Africa. He was their darling, and then, 8 months later, this killing happens. What he says, if anybody wants all of the details, on courtchatter.com, I've got a tab there that's his own explanation. I have found this trial so fascinating because things are so different than in the U.S., but at his bail hearing that happened, I think the next day, he had written out his entire story. You know, here in the U.S., we don't get to hear what the defendant has to say unless they take the stand, and their attorneys interject and put some things in, but we don't get to necessarily hear their whole story. Well, he laid out his story because he wanted bail, and he told his story. So I have it all there in his words, but he says he and Reba, this was early morning hours of Valentine's Day. By the way, they had only been dating for about 3 months. They weren't in this long-term relationship, but she'd spent the night, it was the night before Valentine's. He said he woke up in the middle of the night. Their bedroom is in the upstairs of his place, and that his balcony sliding glass door had been open because they had a fan out there. It was extremely hot, and he got up in the middle of the night to bring the fan in, and he's on his stumps. He doesn't have his legs on, and he goes to bring the fan in, and he hears a noise in the bathroom. And in Oscar's mind, this is his story, you know, it's high crime, very, very high crime in South Africa. Everyone carries a gun in South Africa. It's a big high crime area. He's vulnerable. He's felt vulnerable his whole life because of his disability. He doesn't feel like he can protect himself or anyone else, and there have been break-ins all around there. And even though this was upstairs, he talked about a ladder being up against the house from construction workers earlier. So he glanced into the bathroom. The bathroom is like a bathroom sink tub area, and then there's a separate little room for just the toilet with a closed door. So when he looks in the bathroom area, he sees that window is open, and he sees the toilet door is closed, and there's a light behind it, and someone's in there. And he immediately thinks intruder. Then this sounds crazy, right? So
yes.
He says it's pitch black. He never turned any lights on. So he says he went back to the bed, which is just right there, and grabbed his gun, and he yelled at Reba, call for help, and he yelled at the intruder, and then just started shooting, and he shot 4 times into the bathroom door. And then he yelled, help, help, and Reba never answered back, and so he went back to the bed and turned the lights on and realized she wasn't in the bed. Then he started to realize what happened. He hurried and put his legs on, took his cricket bat, and busted in the bathroom door and found Reba there. Three of the four bullets had hit her, one in the head, and grabbed her and carried her down the stairs, and then she died. So that's his story.
So does any of the evidence match up with what Oscar says?
Not.
I mean,
really.
Are there cricket bat, marks on the door? Can they prove that?
Yeah, he did bust through with the cricket bat, so that's not really a dispute. And he did shoot through a closed locked door. That's not a dispute because poor Reva had splinters of the wood inside her skin through the bullet. You know, the bullet went through and took wood with it. But here's the thing. So leading up to this trial, his story made no sense. Who just does that? Who doesn't check on their girlfriend in the bed first if you think there's an intruder in your room? You know,
right.
It really doesn't make any sense. So I'm like, guilty, guilty, guilty. And then I start, researching it more, and the police really kind of bungled this investigation at the beginning, and plus the prosecution then released information at the beginning that has now been proven not to be true. Mm-hmm. So there's this, kind of cloud around it a little bit. And then his defense is going to put up witnesses, psychologists, whatever, talking about his state of mind, about his disability, how vulnerable he is. There'll be witnesses saying he's always been in fear for his life. That's why he carries a gun everywhere he goes. He's afraid he can't defend himself. The defense is going to ask the judge to not judge him like he would a normal, reasonable man because his mind doesn't work that way. So I started thinking of all these things, and there was not really they didn't have a turmoil relationship. There's no proof of that between the two of them. They were kind of fairly new at it. And so I thought, well, maybe the defense can convince me, because I go into a lot of trials that way. Maybe let's see what you got. Let's see if the state can prove their case or whatever. And then the first witness got up. And then I thought, oh, my gosh, this guy's so guilty.
Oh, my gosh. So what did the first witness say?
Yeah.
I mean, let me stop you. Kathy, hold on. We're talking with Kathy at courtchatter.com about the Oscar Pistorius case. Am I pronouncing his last name right?
Pistorius.
Okay. And you just describing it right there, I was thinking, a good defense attorney could make that believable. Not saying I believe it, but a good defense attorney could. And then you say the first witness came up and just he was toast. So what did the first witness say?
Well, so let's talk about he has the best defense attorney. So there's that. He's got Mr. High Profile, High Paid, best defense attorney. Anyway, so the first three witnesses, these are neighbors. So the first one gets on the stand and says she was awakened by gunshots, and she heard yelling, and she heard a woman yelling. Well, right there off the bat, there's no women yelling if he says Reva was asleep in the bed and he didn't know who was in the bathroom, right?
Right,
so she says that she heard escalation, she heard a woman yelling for help, then she heard a man, and then she heard another gunshot, and then after the gunshot, one last final cry from the woman that faded off. And then neighbor number two gets up there, and I think this was even more damning, says she was awakened. This shooting happened at 3 a.m. So she was awakened at 1 a.m. to fighting going on in that house.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so
wow.
Now, he can't be sound asleep with her. So she says she woke up at 1 a.m. with fighting going on. And they're kind of in estates, and they're fairly big places, so they're kind of far away from each other. So the defense has really played on what could you really hear from that distance. That's ridiculous. You couldn't hear from that distance. But it was hot, and everyone has testified that Oscar's windows were open and their windows were open, and they didn't have anything in between their houses, like trees and stuff. So
right.
And it was the middle of the night. So if you figure, if you believe her, they're fighting for a couple hours because the gunshots happened a little after 3 a.m. But she says she woke up at 1 a.m. to fighting. She was annoyed. She tried to go back to sleep. She did for a little while, woke up again, still heard them fighting, was annoyed, and then woke up again to the gunshots. Then the another neighbor, he happens to be a radiologist, and he's a doctor. He gets woken up to what he says are three gunshots, and the defense is playing with this. There were four gunshots in total, but one witness hears four. One thinks he hears five or six. This guy hears three. So the defense is really playing up with that. In the end, that doesn't really matter because we know there were four shots.
Right.
So the radiologist wakes up to the gunshots, gets up, goes to his balcony, and he hears a woman scream.
So he heard it too.
Yeah, but here's another key about him. This added even more. This was on Friday. This added even more to the state's case. He said when he got up, gunshots, immediately got up and saw the light on over there. And Oscar says that he was in pitch black.
In the dark. There you go.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Kathy,
what kind of happened in the first 5 days.
And the thing is, Kathy, with these witnesses, they have nothing to gain. I mean, they don't have anything against Oscar. Why would they lie? Now, you say that the investigation was kind of bungled in the beginning. How badly was it bungled, and what happened?
Well, here's the thing. Enough for a defense attorney to make a big deal about it. But the initial lead detective has a whole bunch of problems around him. And he was taken off the case right after this happened because
uh-huh.
he's now facing attempted murder charges on
oh,
an unrelated
gosh.
Case. And so, of course, the media blew that up. But then the state released some information almost immediately because Oscar's story was he was on his stumps when he shot into the bathroom door, okay?
Uh-huh.
And then he went back, and then he put his legs on after. And the state says, we know it was premeditated murder because he had his stumps on, and he had his legs on, and why would he have his legs on at 3 in the morning? He knew what he was going to do, and they said the trajectory of the bullets will prove this, and they came right out to say that. And now guess what? The ballistics
what?
Come back, and it looks like that's not going to be the case. It looks like Oscar at least is telling the truth that he was on his stumps. So that's been made a big deal that the state went out on this limb and are calling it premeditation due to his legs being on. And we have yet to hear the testimony, but reports came out right before the trial that the ballistic report shows that it could that the trajectory can follow Oscar's story. And I'm sure the state
really?
Will try and work it into theirs. So that's only the story as far as he didn't have his legs on. So that's just another little twist. However, I will say that I don't know how much it's all going to matter in the end. South
mm-hmm.
Africa doesn't have juries. So it's not a jury
well,
trial.
So, oh,
no.
Okay.
So this is one judge. So this isn't a 12-person layman jury who might think Oscar Pistorius is their hero.
Mm-hmm.
This is a legal-minded judge who's going to look at the evidence. And so I don't know how much the defense will be able to convince her. And you know what? They may convince me. Like I said, I could be swayed. I try and listen to everything that comes out in court. But as of right, we've been through 1 week, and we're in the state's case, and it's really pretty strong at this point, I believe.
Well, we haven't heard the defense. And,
right.
You know, they could have a Perry Mason moment where something drops and we're not expecting it. But I don't know how they're going to overcome those witnesses, Kathy, because
right.
they have nothing to gain by lying. Absolutely nothing.
Well, and they even testified that they didn't even know that was his house. So really didn't have anything. They really didn't know him, never had conversations with him, nothing.
So there again, absolutely no reason for them to lie. So there could be big trouble. Now, what do you think of the judge?
She is the whole thing, Trisha. The whole trial is so interesting and so different from what we're used to seeing. So all witnesses address the judge. So the attorneys, and she's female, so they address her as m'lady. Okay. So the attorneys are both male, and it's funny from our standpoint to watch this trial, and you see these males ask the witness a question, and they answer, well, m'lady, and then answer the question. And every single response is to m'lady. They only address the judge. They don't address the attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
And then, it really is. And then the judge has two advocates that sit on each side of her, and they're kind of going to be her helpers, and they won't make the final decision, but they're there taking notes, and she can discuss things with them. But you see those two and her taking a lot of notes, and I mean a lot. And the attorneys will stop their questioning and just sit there and wait for the judge to catch up, writing whatever she's writing and taking their notes. According to what I've read about the judge, she's the second black female judge appointed to the court since the apartheid ended. She's very, very harsh and hard sentencing on domestic violence, and many are saying this is a case of domestic violence. So they think that if the evidence is there, she will penalize him harshly. The difference is in the court. You know, as soon as attorney objects, so attorney's doing questioning, the other one stands up to object, the other one shuts up immediately and sits down immediately and lets the other guy do his objection. That's so different than our courtrooms. where they're
jumping
over each other half the time. It's just they break for tea time, and they have their tea time.
Oh, they do? They have tea time? Oh, that's hilarious.
Yes. And Oscar sits by himself. The defendant sits behind everybody, like almost they call it in the dock. They call it the dock. But if you imagine all the rows in the gallery, he's like on the first row of the gallery. And then there's a few rows in front of him that all the attorneys and things are on. But he doesn't get to sit at the attorney table. So he has to pass notes back and forth. And so you see notes getting passed back and forth. He's all by himself. It's like Oscar alone on an island. There's nobody on his bench. And he just sits there. He's not at a table. He just sits there all by himself.
That is wild. That is, you know, now I'm interested. I wasn't interested before, but now it's like, okay, this could just turn out to be some freaky event here because, and they take tea time. That is just so darn, that's so flipping cute. They take tea time in court.
So polite.
Well, yes, and everybody, if you want to know more about this trial, as you can see, Kathy is into it, as we say, and she can't draw herself away from it. She knows everything. So go to courtchatter.com. Kathy, don't go, because on the phone we have Mr. Levi Page. Levi, thank you so much for calling in.
Hi, Trisha. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I am great. Like I said, I feel like it's old home week. We had Cheryl McCollum and Kathy from Court Chatter. And now, to top it off, you are the cherry on the cake, if you will, Levi Page. Levi, thank you. Hey, you have some information about Holly Bobo. There's been a lot of activity. And to just kind of get everybody up to speed here, Holly Bobo was kidnapped in broad daylight in 2011. The last person to see her was her brother. He claimed that he saw her walking out with somebody dressed in fatigues, and that was pretty much it. Tell us what's all the activity that's been happening since then.
Well, just weeks ago, there was a search on the property of a man and a younger man. It was a man and his grandson, who's now been arrested for Holly Bobo's murder. And they have not found a body. We don't know if they found body parts, but they found something in a recent search on this property. They were searching wells. They searched an abandoned home. They did an extensive search. They brought in backhoes. And then right after this search, they made an arrest. And this guy is creepy. I don't know if you've seen his picture.
Oh, yeah, on your webpage.
Yes. And he's smiling in his mugshot. He has a history of drugs. He's been arrested for drugs. The rumor around is that he is involved in meth. And I don't know if you've looked at his Facebook account, but I went to his Facebook page. And I'm not in front of my computer, so I forgot his name. But went to his
Zach Adams.
Yeah, if you go to his Facebook page, you will notice some of the books that he likes to read, and one of the books that he likes to read is called The Turner Diaries, which the Southern Poverty Law Center has described as the Bible for the racist right wing. A lot of white supremacists people read that book, and basically this guy that wrote it was a leader of a white nationalist group, and he fantasized about overthrowing the U.S. government in a violent revolution. So that's the kind of books that this guy reads. And he's creepy, and he has a history of violence against women. He was arrested during this search because he put a gun to a female's head, his girlfriend's head, and a knife as well, and threatened to gut her. And his step-parents have also been speaking out to the media, to the local media in Tennessee, and his stepfather says that they were so afraid of him that they slept with weapons near their bed because they were afraid that he would show up at any moment. And he was also...
Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Keep going. Finish up.
They also said that he had threatened his own mother and was violent with his own mother as well. So it's a very scary picture being painted of Zach Adams.
And speaking of scary pictures, if you go to levipageshow.com, there's a picture of him. He looks like he's 9 feet tall. He's not, though. But he looks like Lurch. He looks like a young Lurch from the Addams Family. Very scary, very big. And, oh, he does. I'm looking at him, and it's like he's out of a Hollywood casting agency. You know, I need a scary-looking, creepy guy who looks, you know, huge and looks like he would murder women. He's right out of textbook casting call for this guy, Zachary Adams. So the step parents are speaking out. This is obviously, he lives with his mother and her husband, right?
He lives with his grandfather. That's whose home was searched. That's the property. His
that is, you know,
okay.
And again,
I have
go ahead, Kathy. Kathy from CourtChatter.com, go ahead.
Levi, I think I read that a connection that he had was Holly's mother was one of his elementary school teachers.
That's,
really?
Yes, that's the connection there.
Hmm. And does he match the description of the guy that was seen by Holly's brother leading Holly out of the house or out of the driveway or home?
I don't know if we had ever had a description released to the public. There's another case of a missing girl in Tennessee, Centerville, Tennessee. I don't know all the details about it, but there was a sketch of a man that had been suspected in kidnapping, and he matched that description. So some people are speculating that he could be involved in other cases where he may have preyed on women.
Oh, he is just creepy. And here's the thing. I want to, I'm getting on my soapbox here, but it's so important. How did Zachary Adams become this psychotic white supremacist? How did that happen? He wasn't born that way. We need to find out so we can stop creating Zachary Adams of the world so they won't kill again. That is where I want to try and research this story. Is no, I don't want to give him a hug. No, I don't think he should be let go. If he did this, he should get the death penalty. I have no problem with that. But we need to understand this behavior. That's the only way we can learn how to stop it. Levi Page, I interrupted you. Go ahead. I'm off my soapbox now.
I agree with you, but that's interesting that you mentioned the death penalty, because the district attorney in Decatur County announced that this is a death penalty eligible case, so he could be facing the death penalty. And what he's charged with is aggravated kidnapping and first-degree felony murder. And the theory is that she died during the course of a kidnapping. Maybe she was resisting the kidnapping, and she died as a result of that. Her blood was found at the home, so he did something to inflict some sort of injury to her on her own property because she was bleeding and her blood was found at her home. Mm-hmm. So who knows when she died or how she died, but we do know that she was bleeding, so he did something to her to cause her to bleed.
Oh, that's so awful. And here's the thing, too. Her brother, Holly's brother, witnessed her walking away with this guy. And mm-hmm. somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but if I remember correctly, he just looked out and saw his sister walking away with somebody. He didn't think, oh, my God, she's being kidnapped. That poor guy has been put through the ringer.
It
hurts. It hurts me when I think about, you know, people on Web Sleuths who assume the brother did something. That's why people have got to be careful. You know, your words, when you type them or you say them, very harsh. And this guy went through hell. I mean, can you imagine? I'm sure his life will never be the same, because he will always be asking himself, why didn't I do more? And so people need to let up on this poor guy. He's been through enough hell. So you've seen it too, Levi, huh?
This is a very rural area, and he said that he thought that it was her boyfriend that was walking with her into the woods. He didn't think that it was some stranger abducting her. And the fact is that he could have easily been confused, because this is a very rural area. People hunt there, and the person was wearing camouflage. Who knows how many people in the area were wearing camouflage that day. So if someone's wearing a cap and a camouflage jacket, you're not going to be able to tell exactly who it is. So it's understandable why he didn't the alarms didn't go off in his head that something is wrong.
Exactly. I mean, if this was New York City
bad.
And somebody was in camouflage, different story. But you go to any rural area, and you know half the town is in camouflage. It's no big deal.
Yes, and Trisha, there were people in the community that have spoken out and said that this guy and his friends, plural, were stalking Holly Bobo in the week before she vanished. That they had a coon hunt there in the area, and apparently they have a lot of festivities around this time. And Holly Bobo liked to sing, and they had a stage set up where she was singing. And apparently at this event, that is when he and his friends were stalking her. And it's interesting because the TBI, the head of the TBI, has always said that they were looking at people, plural, as having knowledge as to what happened with Holly Bobo. And our local media, the Nashville media, said that a year ago they were given a list of five people that were the top suspects in the case, and this man was one of them. That was given to the media. And that shows you that he's been on law enforcement's radar for at least a year that we know of. And I'm thinking, if I was a betting person, there's going to be more arrests here.
Yeah.
Especially,
I hope so.
Especially if he's involved in drugs, they could use that to their advantage like we've seen in other cases, because they can get these people on drug charges and lock them up, and then they'll be able to interrogate them. So they're going to be putting the squeeze to not only him, but his grandfather and his associates who could have been involved in the drug trade, specifically meth, which is scary because you know how people act when they get on meth. They act nuts. Ugh.
They go crazy. I saw this one video recently of a meth head, and it was a live video, actually cut himself open and start taking out his innards. Just with his hand, because he thought it was cool. I mean, that's how crazy people get on meth. It's the devil's drug. It's the worst, absolute worst. It's interesting, Levi, when you said, oh, and Kathy from Court Chatter, jump in here. Don't hesitate. Just tell me to shut up. You have something to say, okay? but here's the thing. When you talked about Holly Bobo singing on stage, she liked to get on stage, and they were there stalking her, it reminds me of what John Douglas said. He is the FBI profiler. I saw him speak once, and he said that, you know, he has daughters, and he was terrified to let them go anywhere, because if you smile at somebody and they've got this twisted thing in their brain, that's who begins stalking you. He taught his daughters not to smile at anybody, not to look at them in the eye, never converse with a stranger. And that's just how it happens, though. You know, they're out in public, and they see him, and boom. Or perhaps they were, you know, following his first grade teacher, saw she had a cute daughter, and went that way. It's, you never know, and that's what's so frightening, and that's why we need to stop people like Zachary Adams from even becoming psychopaths, because there is a way to stop it, because they're not born that way. So, Kathy, have you been following Holly's case at all, or is this some kind of news to you?
Not super close, but what's gone on just recently, when they had the search warrant and they were out there, and then when they arrested him. But I don't know as many details as Levi does.
Well, Levi, I don't know if you know this, Kathy. Levi knows absolutely every single detail about every case ever on the planet. He's kind of a genius that way. So that's why we love him. Hey, guys, I want to change the subject here. On my iHeart show this week, I had a couple of guests on to talk about two horrific cases of child abuse that I want to bring up now. One of them has not made the national media, and I don't know why. It's Tegan Skiba. She was 4 years old. Her mom went away to some army training thing. She was left with her boyfriend, and he tortured her and sexually abused her and sexually tortured her and did horrific things to her. He whipped her so hard with a cloth old plug that it frayed and the metal embedded in Tegan's skin. Now, here's the thing about Tegan Skiba. The guy was, Jonathan Richardson. Tegan's mom and Jonathan were living in Jonathan's grandmother's backyard shed. No running water, nothing. The grandma said she left the door open so they could come in and out all the time. The grandma said that Richardson had a temper, but apparently the mom didn't know Richardson that long, and she just moves in with him and hands her kid, you know, just basically serves her kid up on a silver platter to this lunatic. Have you guys heard of the of Tegan's case at all?
Yes.
Levi, have you?
I have not heard of the case.
And that's what I mean. See, it's not making national news. But, Kathy, go ahead.
Well, the only reason that I've heard of it is they live stream the opening statements of the trial. So, you know, if anything's live streamed, then I'm watching it on Whoop TV with my whole group of people. And so we watched the opening statements, and it was horrible, awful, tear-jerking. You want the guy to be fried right now. Let's not give him any lethal injection. Let's put him out in the street and let – I mean, it's so awful. It's so horrible what he did to this little girl that I, for one, am grateful that they haven't streamed the rest of the trial. They're going to stream closing statements. So they did opening statements and closing arguments only. So we will get to see them wrap it up and then the verdict. So it's still in its case now. But – police officers, oh my gosh, I watched a video. They're releasing little clips of this testimony. And here's, you know, detectives that see this stuff all the time. Broke down on the stand, even all this time afterwards, about what he saw when he walked in the hospital and saw a little girl. And he broke down crying on the stand last week.
That was Detective Matt DeSilva. And when he's on the stand, he is this big, burly guy. I mean, when you think of a tough cop, he comes to mind, and he is crying like a baby. He can't even continue because he was at the hospital with the doctor, and the doctor, after she had, I guess, I'm assuming after she passed away, the doctor was showing him the wounds, and he finally said, stop, just stop. This horrific human being, this Jonathan Richardson, I don't know where he came from, what rock he crawled over under, but again, how was he created? None of his family is in court with him. He has absolutely no support. And I mean, I understand it, but also that also sheds a little light on his life, too. Doesn't excuse anything. I'm not saying he needs more hugs. He needs the death penalty. But there was something horrific that happened in his life that turned him into this maniac. And you've got to wonder, was this the first time he was alone with a small child, and that's why he went nuts? Has he done this before? I don't know. Kathy, do you know how close they are to wrapping it up? I think it's fairly soon, isn't it?
Yes, I think that they will have it wrapped up this week. I'm sorry, I'm not completely up on it because I've been working the graveyard shift covering
the
Sirius.
Well,
but
and,
I believe it is. I have a friend, actually, in Whoop TV Watch Trials, that her mother has been attending that trial because she lives close to it. And it has affected her greatly.
Really?
So,
oh, she might be.
Can you imagine what the jurors are going to have to live with? They have to see all those pictures. And these are just regular people.
There is no therapy for people after they've been on a jury, and there should be, because that's almost, it's like they get post-traumatic stress disorder. They're not used to seeing these horrific things. If this does it to a police officer, imagine what it's going to do to those jury members. It's horrible.
Right.
And they're going to have, I think they'll probably, some of them might have lasting problems. That's a whole other story we should do on what happens to a jury after a trial when they've been traumatized. But
I've got messages popping up right here saying it is far from over. The trial's still got a long ways to go. Every day his grandma and mom are there.
That's what I was told
by the woman that has her mom attending the trial.
Oh, see, there was a reporter that I interviewed, and she said that he has no one. Well, that's good to know.
And
she says the
only people there for the little girl are domestic violence advocates. No family there for the little girl.
Oh, that's awful. Oh, that's just horrible. Well, see, the mom is charged, too. She's charged with, I can't remember, it's not murder, but it's a neglect, abuse, something like that. And so I think she might be in jail, if I'm not mistaken. But, I don't know why this hasn't gotten more national attention, because it should, because this is something that should never, ever happen. Now, if you're not already angry enough, let me make blood spurt out of your eyes, okay? You ready for this one?
I don't like this one.
Is, Oh, you got to have it. It's Desiree.
Yeah, I know.
A little, you know, little Desiree. Okay, I'm trying to. Desiree Sheldon. She's 2 years old. Her mother's husband crushed her skull because she wouldn't stop crying and killed her. Now, that's bad enough, but wait till you hear this. Desiree's legs were broken, and the mom finally took her to the hospital. And
a week later.
One of the legs was broken a while before that, and one of them was new. Anyway, what happened was they charged her with, you know, some sort of neglect. She said she didn't know what happened. Then she said that she fell. Basically what it turned out, because I've talked to her sister, it's turned out it looks like the husband that's been arrested, Dennis Doobie, it looks like he was the one that broke her legs too. But you know what authorities did? They put her on probation. She's a sex offender. She had sex with a 15-year-old, had a baby by him. The baby was been removed, thank God. And in Vermont, I guess you're on parole for your life if you're a sex offender. She was already on parole. So, Sandy East, that's the mom. Yeah?
Didn't she have custody of that 15-year-old?
Hold on.
Okay,
that's what it said
right.
in the paper. That's what it said in the paper. But when I talked to her sister said, absolutely not. She said that is, and her sister is not a fan of hers. She said, absolutely not. It was a neighbor's friend. Because that's what I read. I'm like, oh, my God, she had custody? No. According to the sister, I need to look into that so I can get the story straight.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. So, anyway, she, the mom, Sandy, is put on probation. Her sister, Lisa Easton, goes to authorities and says, for God's sakes, put her in prison. Do something. Get those kids away from her. She had another 12-year-old daughter there, too. You know, my sister is sick. She's evil. I need these kids protected. They totally ignored her. She starts a petition online, her sister, Lisa Eastman, saying, DFS won't take these kids away. I'm afraid something's going to happen. Please help me. Please help me. This happened when she was put on probation. It was March 2013. Desiree was taken from her and put in a foster home. They gave her back to her in October. In October. They handed her up again on a silver platter. In a few months, Desiree is dead from her skull being crushed. Levi, can you believe this stuff?
It's sickening, Tricia. I mean, it really is sickening, and it shows you how... You know, the DCF, I mean, it's easy to blame them, but they are underfunded, they are underpaid, they are understaffed, and it's terrible that these situations happen. It reminds me of the case in North Carolina that happened a couple of years ago. Remember, Alyssa Baker was accused of beating her stepchild. There were numerous complaints to DCF, and they refused to take the child away from her. Remember, that's the little girl that that had the prosthesis leg.
Oh, that's
and
right. Yes.
They later found her body parts scattered across that town in North Carolina because they put her through a wood chipper. That evil, disgusting woman. So that's what this case eerily reminds me of, and it's once again highlights that we need to get more employees for DCS so they can do more thorough investigations and keep check on these trashy families.
Exactly. And the thing is, common sense tells you that if there are old broken bones and this woman is already on probation as a sex offender, you just don't give the kid back. And I know they're understaffed. And you know what? I know people who work for DFS, and they are wonderful, caring, loving people. But occasionally you get someone that just doesn't do their job. And this is such a big, you know, fall through the cracks. It's like it fell through the canyon. This had so many red flags that this child should have never been given back. And it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. He's just been arrested, Dennis Doobie. And in court, Desiree's mom, Sandy, got up and started screaming, "What did you do to my baby? What did you do to my baby?" And you know, everybody went, "Where were you? You know, you brought the guy home. Yeah, sit, shut up and sit down. They haven't charged her yet. Now, I know her sister Lisa has spoken to her finally, and I think I'm going to have Lisa on my show again this Thursday, so we'll find out what's happening. But those are just the cases we know about, everyone, and that's what's so frightening. Again, it all comes down to how are these monsters created? Every story we talk about here comes down to how was this person created that they ended up doing this. And that's what we need to focus on, is the beginning of the criminal mind. Then we can stop these horrific incidents from happening. Okay, I'm off my soapbox. Levi Page, do you have anything else you'd like to discuss, talk about, pour your heart out about? Perhaps you have some details that you're not supposed to tell that you would like to spill. Just we're opening the floor. Tell us anything.
Well, Trisha, I hope everybody, right after your show Thursday night, I hope they go to my website, levipageshow.com, and listen to my show, because or I don't know if you're familiar with the Morgan Harrington case in Virginia.
Oh, very much
we're
so,
gonna
yes.
We're going to have Morgan's parents, Dan and Jill Harrington, on this show. And
you're
also
wonderful.
Remember the Alexis Murphy case that we've talked about, another young woman that is missing, presumed dead. They've made an arrest in that case, and we're going to talk to her great aunt, Trina Murphy. All three of them are going to be on my show Thursday night at 10 Eastern, 9 Central.
And that's, you go to levipageshow.com, and Levi, I'll put the link up everywhere for you. So glad to have you back. I know you took a couple, did you take a couple weeks off, or was it just one?
I took a couple of weeks off.
Yeah, so you're back. So that's you're back, and you're going strong.
Mm-hmm.
And Kathy at courtchatter.com, what's going on in your life?
Well, for those who are not staying up all night long and watching the Oscar Pistorius case with me, one, I have the archives to the trial, so they can watch it anytime they want on my site, and I do a daily recap, so you don't have to watch it at all if you don't want to, and I break it all down every day. And tomorrow, I don't know if you remember the 17-year-old in Florida that killed his parents and then threw a big house party while his
yes.
parents were in the bedroom.
Right.
He has pled. He pled. That was going to trial, and he has pled guilty. And his sentencing is going to be tomorrow, but it's going to be interesting because it's going to be sort of a mini trial. His sentencing starts tomorrow, and they say they expect it to last 1 to 2 weeks.
Wow.
So that is up on my site. That article is up on my site, and we will have a live stream to that also beginning tomorrow. His name was Tyler Hadley.
That is fantastic. So levipageshow.com and courtchatter.com, my two wonderful guests, Levi and Kathy, thank you so much. You make this show so easy, and it's just fun having you on. Even though we talk about terrible subjects, we do try and at times have a little bit of a laugh here and there. So thank you so much for joining us tonight. You guys take care, and I'll have you on again real soon, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye now. Kathy from courtchatter.com and Levi Page, levipageshow.com. Okay, kids, we did it again. It's another show over with. And next week, boy, I don't know what. There's so much to talk about. I'm sure things will change and happen, and we'll have a whole new set of issues coming up. That plane crash, the Malaysian Air, oh, that is just gut-wrenching, you know, because let's face it. You hear about something like this, they think something catastrophic happened because there was no warning. The pilot never said he was in trouble. So let's just say that it looks like, I can't say for sure, but it looks like it was an explosion. And you can't help but put yourself in that seat of somebody on that plane and having that happen. And it just makes your heart sink to your stomach. It is so awful. But they have found a little bit of debris now, and hopefully we'll have some answers here real soon on that case. So don't forget to join me on iHeartRadio. What you need to do is you can go to Web Sleuths. The link is there under my radio show thread, and I put it on my Facebook page, and I put it in the Twitter. And you can also go to Spreaker. That's S-P as in puppy, R, EAKER.com, and put in Trisha G, and I should pop up there. That's Spreaker. Some poor person put Streaker and was taken right to a porn site. So no, it's Spreaker. It's like speaker, but with an R, SPREAKER. All the shows for my iHeartRadio show are right there for you. Okay, Trisha's True Crime Radio is brought to you by the wonderful people at Pause for Purple Hearts in Palo Alto, California. Pause for Purple Hearts is the very first program of its kind to offer therapeutic intervention for veterans and active duty military personnel by teaching those with post-traumatic stress disorder to train service dogs for their comrades with combat-related injuries. Go to www.pauseforpurplehearts.org. And do remember this, opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from websleuth.com, LLC, and forumsforjustice.org. Okay, everybody, Trisha's True Crime Radio will be back next week where we talk about true crime and current events, and we always, always, always do it with common sense. Good night, everybody.